This episode is brought to you by pumpkin spice lattes and apple ciders. Welcome back, everybody, to My Faith Core Chemist. I'm your host, Geraldo.
And I'm Beck. We are so excited to be back with the podcast. After our incredible Pride Summer special, we decided to take a short break to recuperate and plan the next semester or so of the podcast. And now we're back with even more exciting stories to share. And so we're really excited about today's episode. We interviewed an amazing chemist, and we can't wait for y'all to listen to it. And so with that, here's our show. So today we're so excited to introduce y'all to an incredible scientist. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, thanks, Beck. My name is Laura Haynes. I use she, her pronouns. I graduated with a degree in chemistry from Smith College a long time ago. But then I went and did I started graduate school studying PCHEM out at the University of Colorado. And then I got my PhD in biochemistry at the University of Vermont. And now I'm a postdoc at UMich. Go Blue.
Yeah.
Go studying Blue. studying protein evolution, doing like high throughput screens to understand how proteins function and how they evolve to.
Cool. Awesome.
Well, it's great to have you here.
Yeah. Today. Thank you for being here. So let's start from the beginning of everything.
Okay.
Can you tell us about your experience as an undergraduate at Smith College and how you got interested in chemistry? How did your chemistry career start?
Yeah, I think I got interested in chemistry in high school. It came really naturally to me. So I think that was like, I was like, oh, this is fun and something I like doing. And it wasn't biology because like after you finish like sophomore biology where you've had to memorize 20,000 things and then nothing is like makes, there's no lot. Sorry, clearly a biochemist now, but there wasn't like a logical flow to it. I was like, oh, I love it. There's like rules and there's logic. It's like a language that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then I got to college at Smith, wanted to be one of the cool kids.
Ooh.
And you would think that, so like, I was like, okay, I'll take chemistry, but I like dropped out of calculus because I was like, well, the cool women aren't taking calculus. So I'm obviously not going to do that. It's a women's college. Like, mm-hmm. What was I thinking? Like, a little crazy. And then everyone's like, organic chemistry, oh, word, hate it. Everyone told me that. And so I like was about to drop out. I was like, as I went to my advisor and she was, and I was like, okay, I'm not going to take organic chemistry. I'm going to be an anthropology major. That sounds a lot more reasonable to me. And she was like, I think this is against all rules at the time. She was like, wouldn't give me my registration code to register unless I agreed to take organic chemistry. So we really need to thank her for encouraging me to do that. So then I got organic chemistry. It's true, was not my like strong suit, but then I got into doing PCHEM work and I loved it. So that was kind of my journey into doing chemistry in college, but probably not a good idea to withhold students' registration.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very like
just like some casual pushing you Ooh. Into the chemistry field,
right? So. Yeah, she's like, no, you stay, do this. I want to do this.
amazing.
Yeah.
So where does Colorado fit into this? So you worked at the University of Vermont as a research tech, correct, before starting graduate school there. So was that in between college and graduate school and kind of like one of the reasons why you came back to the University of Vermont for graduate school, or kind of what was that journey like?
Well, you're in for a story. So I graduated college. I was like, I'm going to go to grad school. And I loved PCHEM, the lab I was working in, did spectroscopy, was doing atmospheric chemistry. I was like, this is so cool. I want to do it. So I was like, I'm going to go. So I just was like, I debated. I was like, I'm going to go right to graduate school. Like, that's the thing to do. I'm sure lots of seniors in college have the same debate. Like, should I take a pause or not? Mm-hmm. So I got into a bunch of different schools and I got into Colorado and I got into UC Berkeley. And I was like, well, Colorado's a little bit closer to home back in Vermont. Because meanwhile, my mother has like lost her job. She doesn't have any money. She doesn't have like affordable housing. She doesn't have a place to live. So I'm like struggling with this whole, what do I do situation? And so it's like, I feel like I'm academically gifted, like whatever that means, I should go to graduate school. but also there's like this family obligation where it's like only child single parent dynamics. And I was like, mm-hmm. I was like, well, I don't really want to be part of this mess. So I'm going to leave and come back and not come back. And that wasn't the right decision, man. You guys got a whole bunch of story all at once. So let me know if you need a backup on any of that. So I went out to Colorado to start graduate school. And like for the first time in my life, found that I was like really struggling. This was really hard. And it was probably really hard because I was dealing with family stuff back home, which mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily coalesce with being a graduate student all that well.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up dropping out of that program. I think I was like a class shy of a coursework master's, but I was like, this just wasn't going to work out. So, mm-hmm. and then I moved back home. And so on top of my mother being destitute, maybe for lack of a better word, she also was getting sick with multiple myeloma. That's it's a blood cancer. So I moved home. We didn't know at that time. I moved home to, you know, be close to her because clearly things weren't working out.
Mm-hmm.
Then she got sick. And so then I was working as a technician while she was initially getting diagnosed. So that's how I ended up becoming a lab tech. You may not be aware of Vermont. I grew up in Vermont, and so I didn't even know that like science was a career you could have. I didn't even know there were scientists like living around me. I thought if you were a scientist, you were a pharmacist or a doctor, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. So I, you know, didn't seem like a hotbed for scientific work. So I had a couple of job offers, one for like environmental testing and one working for this lab at the university. And I decided the lab at the university, may pay a little less, but at least it would be like intellectually stimulating to
mm-hmm. yeah.
instead of just running GCMS all day on soil samples.
yeah.
So that, does that answer your question? That's like,
yeah, yeah,
that was like so much information at once. I'm so sorry.
That was, no. I mean, yeah, that was,
no,
that,
but it's great that you touched the topic because I don't think we have talked about family in the show. And we're like having to make these really, really important decisions can, you know, change everything in your career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also how like there are always like going to be multiple factors for like why you decide to
go to
a certain graduate mm-hmm. school, like join a certain lab, like take a certain job or whatever. It's not really as just like cut and dry as like that's where the good science is and therefore like right. leave the rest of your life behind, like because right. you can't really do like that's not really how life works. So I think that's like this is a really good example of that.
Yeah.
Like thank you yeah. for sharing that with
thank us. You so no much worries. For sharing that. Yeah.
Oh, but, you're totally welcome. It's really my passion. I like the way academic science works right now. It's really geared to this model that hasn't existed for decades, where it's mm-hmm. a white man who has a wife at home raising the kids, and he has, and then that job gives you enough money to move wherever you have to move.
Right.
And the wife's taking care of the house. Like it's the system hasn't caught up to reality yet. So
mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
And I think it's starting to catch up at like the higher ranks, but it's assumed when you're 20 something and you're a graduate student and a postdoc, you are really flexible and can move around.
Yeah.
Which isn't true. People mm-hmm. have commitments. So yeah. This is my passion project.
So you eventually decided to start a PhD program at the University of Vermont. What was that process like deciding to like go back to graduate school after like taking a little bit of a break? And then like, how was your experience at Vermont as a graduate student?
So it was good. It was a good experience. I was working in a lab as a technician, and it was a really nice technician position where I had like my own project that I was working on, and the project was working, which is awesome.
That's nice.
Doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
And my boss he suggested I apply to the program, and I really wavered. I was like, oh, but like, I was like, should I do this? Should I not do this? The doctor had told me my mother had like 2 years to live. So I was mm-hmm. like, do I want to start, you know, should I do this program? Mm-hmm. And I still had this like, in my system, I still had this like prestige issue going on in my head where like there's this mentality that like the only good science is science that's happening at these prestigious universities, which isn't 100% not true.
Yeah.
So I was like, should I wait until I'm like 28? Should I go back at 26? Like, I don't know. And eventually I decided that it was a risk worth taking. I went to some conferences and I was like presented a poster on what I've been doing. People were really into it and excited about it. And so I decided like that was kind of like helped me make the decision that was like the right decision to do. So I did that. And I was really lucky. I was able to transfer in a lot of my coursework from Colorado, which they approved of. We got approved. So I got to like skip a bunch of the coursework. But it turns out I was in a biochemistry department and I had never taken a biology class. Not true. Not true. I had taken one semester of biology, intro biology as an undergrad. And my PhD work was in blood clotting. And I went back at one point and like, as I was like cleaning out my, I don't know if y'all did this, but like I had like boxes of my undergrad notes for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
I'm like, I never looked at them. So eventually I tossed them out and I found this quiz I had taken this class where I had like gotten all the questions on blood clotting wrong. So clearly I wasn't even paying attention in this class. So yeah, I had to take a biology class. So I had to prove to them I actually knew something about biology. To be honest,
Amazing. So that was that.
So I was in a really well-funded lab for graduate school. And so that was nice. We had like pretty much you can do what you want to do as long as you're done. Mm-hmm. So overall, that was a good experience. I mean, I don't want to bash on that department at all because I had a really great experience there, yeah. But it was also just, it's a smaller university. There's fewer resources on campus. Mm-hmm. But still way more resources than I ever would have thought as a kid growing up there even existed. Like,
yeah,
literally had no idea. Yeah. So yeah, it was good. It was a good experience. I think it was really different than the experience I see the graduate students at U of M having, and really mm-hmm. different than the graduate experience I was having in Colorado.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a smaller department, so it was much more personable. Like you knew everyone in the department, you often knew their partners and their kids' names, like. And given like my life circumstances at the time, that was probably a really good thing. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. So a little bit different than what I see. And also I think sometimes because of the lack of access to fancy equipment, there was often like you all should correct me if I'm saying something that totally contradicts your experience. Cause I'm curious to hear you too, but like a lack of, in that vacuum of having access to all those things, there's often a real focus on like, how do you do this yourself without having to use these resources that don't exist for us easily? Mm-hmm. I think I got very good training in like how to do the basic fundamental things basically mm-hmm. that yeah. we need to do our jobs.
Yeah.
Because there weren't cores to like send things out to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think sometimes we think about how like lucky we are that we don't really like mm-hmm. have to spend a lot of time and energy on like some of the skills that are like fundamental to doing like chemistry research, just because yeah. we're like in a department that has so many resources mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. does have like all of those things that are able to like make our day-to-day life a little bit easier as grad students. I think like, yeah.
Like I'm really jealous of y'all's experience. not gonna lie. But also at the same time, like, I'm really grateful I know how to do that. Like,
this yeah, job. Like,
yeah, 100%.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
I can work somewhere and I think those skills are really important to have too. But mm-hmm. like, also at the same time, the ability to send things out to just like prep things for mass spec. Like, I was like, we would do mass spec work and we'd have to do like all of the iodinations and everything to make sure that we were blocking groups on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably butchering all that because it's been so long. And we were prepping to send some out right now. We were like, oh, we just like cut the band out and do nothing else. We don't have to do the trypsinization ourselves. Great. No,
this is very simple now.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is so much easier than what I thought it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think, I don't know what the question was eventually. That was me rambling on.
No, that was perfect.
That was, yeah.
We just wanted to hear that transition. So that was great.
Yeah.
And we're going to ask about more transition. So after you finish your PhD, you decided to stay at Vermont to do a postdoc. Can you talk about, you know, that experience being mm-hmm. a postdoc, and was it any different from being a graduate student in the department? You know, because we have two different positions in one department. Mm-hmm. How different or how was your experience as a postdoc?
So obviously, I stayed for family reasons to mm-hmm. do that. So that doesn't come across in my CV. I should have sent you guys a disclaimer.
Well, now, I mean, yeah, I mean, this whole story just makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
Also, now that like you're kind of explaining that, exactly, like more than you can get from just like looking at your LinkedIn or, you know,
right.
That's not the full story to anybody. So.
Yeah, I stayed on because of that. And again, I was under this like crazy misconception. My mother was about to die. But then new drugs came on the market and she didn't. So I think because I did, I was a technician and then I did a graduate school and then I was a postdoc. And I think this is just like my own personal burden. I always kind of see myself as being a technician. And it's really hard as like I advance in my career to see myself in those other roles. Right. So I think that people in the department knew me as this technician and this graduate student. And I think they expected me to want to go someplace else. And I did, because it was a small department. So I did want to transition out of it.
So you mean somewhere else, as in like a different lab? Or...
Well, I moved to a different laboratory, doing related but different research. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really good experience. It was a good, because to like switch labs and have to like learn a new set of skills, which is why I did it. I moved from a lab that did like very basic biochemistry to doing more cellular based work, because I somehow I've gotten stuck in biology land. So
I could never, not me.
Can't really. I know. I'm like.
I said that too. Like, you don't want to know the things that undergraduate Laura said. They were not. They were just like.
I would be a total fish out of water. I also only took like the closest thing to a biology class in undergrad that I took was biochem, and I was supposed to take that my senior year to graduate.
Yeah. It's like, so. You have to learn 20 amino acids, the three letter and the one. That's too much. I can't memorize all of that.
But that's like, right? Like, to have to memorize the amino acids. Like, I can't. This is like my whole like philosophy, right? It's memorization for no point.
Yeah, I agree.
I have a phone in my pocket. Like, I can look this stuff up.
Thank you.
And that's what we do. If I need to like use an amino acid in lab, right. I can just like look up the name of it.
Right, exactly. I don't know why. But like, you're a chemist, right? So, like, we're chemists. So like, but if you don't know the name of it, like, you can look at the functional group and you have some idea of what it's going to do.
Right,
like,
right.
Exactly.
That's, and in my opinion, that's such a more valuable skill to be able to like understand, like, why does the name so important? Like, what, as long as you... If you could understand the chemistry behind it, then and it's in some sort of context within a protein, you probably can understand the biochemistry behind it if you're looking at it specifically.
Yeah.
So
hilarious. Yeah, memorizing
things for the birds. I hate memorizing things. I can't do it. Why do we force people to memorize this?
I remember we had to memorize the Krebs cycle. Is that the one that you
the glucose one?
With all the enzymes. Why? I'm sorry for all the biologists
good times, that are good, listening good to times, this. Good. Yes.
No, I feel so bad. I'm probably ruining my job prospect. But if you do the Krebs cycle, sorry. If you do the Krebs cycle and you look at the actual reactions that are happening, it's so beautiful and how simplistic. Like,
no, the chemistry is beautiful.
The chemistry is beautiful. It's beautiful. Like, how do you control?
Just not the biology.
How do you control the biology? I mean, the biology is cool too, but like, how do you control an oxidant? Like, how do you control this oxidation so you don't have this massive explosion and you still got this energy? Like, that's really cool to do it stepwise. Like, it's super cool.
It's cool.
So yeah, so here I am, like, taking this, like, because I'm forced now to take biochemistry classes because that's what I'm getting a degree in, and so I'm like pushing all my electrons trying to because like. And everyone else is just memorizing it. And I'm like, I can't memorize this, guys. Like, I have to like draw it out from like first principles every time. So chemistry is great because it's a tool. So biology taught the conscious chemistry. Great.
So you were at the University of Vermont, stayed for a postdoc, and you said like, again, for family reasons. And that was like, you know, you still got that experience of like being able to be in a different lab and learn some new skills. So you ended up deciding to go and do a second postdoc, correct? Mm-hmm. At the University of Michigan, where you're at now. So
exactly.
Go blue. So what was that transition like? Kind of like, what was your reasoning behind wanting to do a second postdoc? Mm-hmm. And kind of like finally like go and experience like a new department, a new place after being at Vermont for so long.
Yeah. So my mother had passed away. That was clearly coming, right? She passed away in December of 2016. And I was like, do I even like science anymore? Like, I've been doing this for a while. Like, I'm good at this. And people are like, I'm applying for faculty jobs. I'm just like, I don't know if I have this passion for it anymore. Like, mm-hmm. I need to do like a little bit of soul searching. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do something that was related to what I was doing, but learn some new stuff and see if it was still what I wanted to do. So I ended up contacting David, and David and I had met at a conference like once years ago, but we mm-hmm. hadn't, because he's a geneticist, which is like actual biology. I was like, I don't think I have anything in common with this guy, but I'm going to email him anyway, because everyone says mm-hmm. he's just really nice. He's really nice. And he is, in fact, really nice. And it was such like a nice, welcoming, warm environment to come into that I can say I like science again. So that was my transition. I think, get back to your guys' earlier question. I think you can, like, I think there's a space to be able to work at the same university. Mm-hmm. I don't think I necessarily went about the right way because I stayed pretty close afield. I think, I definitely think it should be more accepted that you should be able to work close mm-hmm. to home or mm-hmm. close, stay in the same space. I mean, people have commitments, but I think coming to Michigan was a really good decision because it gave me this whole new space to explore things that I wouldn't have been able to explore in that space. And so it's, as I'm like looking for faculty jobs, it's really improved my outlook on like, or broaden my horizons of what I think is possible. So
yeah.
I definitely think there's that value that historically has been there and being able to move to a different lab, a different university, and then we should be able to commingle all our sciences together, mm-hmm. Which is what you hear when you do that. But I definitely got slammed on grant applications for not moving. So I think we need to make that less of it. I think that needs to become less of like a shameful thing not to.
Yeah,
like,
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are many reasons why mm-hmm. someone would stay at the same university to do a postdoc. Like,
yeah, and like you were saying, like just because it's the same university doesn't mean that you can't still like get the same type of like at least like learning experiences, mm-hmm. especially if you're like in a different lab and things like that. And like as a postdoc, mm-hmm. it's like a very different role than a graduate student.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, you're like developing your leadership skills in like a completely new way, mm-hmm. and you're learning this like new science in this new lab environment. So yeah, I think it's interesting. Like Geraldo is saying, like, we haven't really talked about that much on the podcast, but like this just like idea that the field is fixated on, that like you have to be like flexible enough in every stage of your life to be able to just like move to mm-hmm. a new department or a new school or whatever, like at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Personal career. Yeah. Exactly. That's not, it's, I mean, it's not going to be possible for everybody. It's going to be possible for some, but it certainly won't be possible for all people. So.
Yeah, we had this visiting student from the Netherlands, and he was just flabbergasted. I really remember him being so flabbergasted that in America we moved all over this giant country mm-hmm. to find different laboratories to work in. Mm-hmm. He was like, "But I go to school in the town that I grew up in. I hope I can work in this town." And he probably is working there now. So it's just this like, yeah, it's a strange dichotomy, I guess. I don't know if it's uniquely American, but I definitely think it's pervasive in our education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Graduate education.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So you changing gears a little bit.
Yeah, no worries.
You also mentioned that you're currently in the process of applying for jobs. Can mm-hmm. you briefly guide us through that process and what advice you can give to any folks out there that are thinking about applying for jobs or, you know, other positions right now?
Oh, I'm applying for academic jobs, so I'll preface it with that. This is part of my whole soul searching because I was like, do I want to stay in academia?
Yeah.
And I think the conclusion I reached is that yes, I'm willing to put up with academia. That's not the right word, but I'm willing to stay in I want to stay in academia and put up with what I see are some of the issues with it, because mm-hmm. I want to be a force for a change on the inside.
There you go. That's what we need.
That is what we need. Especially just like having PIs who come from like different backgrounds and mm-hmm. different experiences that aren't just like the typical, like you did your prestigious undergrad here, your prestigious grad postdoc here, yeah, your prestigious mm-hmm. postdoc here, and now mm-hmm. you're a successful PI. Like there are so many like different mixes of all of that. And like, I think that, yeah. I'm just so excited.
I know. See, like, they've never done that. Yeah. We need.
Yeah. So thanks. That was part of my soul searching about coming out to Michigan. I also just wasn't, I'll get back to the actual question.
Yeah.
I wasn't I didn't want to talk about my life. Like, it's embarrassing saying that you were like really poor and you're so poor that you have to take care of your family and they're like taking care of them on your graduate student stipend. Like, you don't want to talk about that. So yeah, so that was like the whole thing there. So I would say my advice, if you're doing this, is don't procrastinate. I am definitely, I've developed the bad habit of being a last minute everything person. And I think I'll let you all know how it goes if I get any offers, but I think knowing what you value is really, that's what's important to me. Like if I'm putting myself out there and where I'm applying, they're not going to value what I value, then it's not going to be a good fit. And so I wouldn't be able to achieve my goals. So yeah, that's, I don't have like great like sage advice though. I wish I had wisdom to share with everyone, but I don't.
No, that's good. That's great.
Yeah, I think, that's good. So switching gears a little bit again, you told us, and thank you so much for sharing this information with us.
No worries.
That you are expecting a child, which is really exciting. Congrats. It's really exciting. Can you tell us a little bit about like what your experience has been like as a pregnant person working in research and like how that has like fit in with like your work life? And yeah, I guess, yeah. Because again, I don't think we've never talked about this.
Yeah.
We have never talked about this on our podcast before either. So a lot of firsts. Yeah,
Yeah. So I'm pregnant. I'm 7 months pregnant.
I'm excited.
I wasn't prepared. I guess the biggest thing is I wasn't prepared for how like physically exhausting it would be.
I can't imagine.
So like in the first trimester, luckily I don't work. We don't work with too many chemicals that are teratogens. So I wasn't too worried about that. It was easy to avoid doing chemistry there.
No.
But I was so nauseous and tired. I was like 6 weeks pregnant and I had to tell my PI David that I was pregnant because I was like, I was supposed to be training a new postdoc. And I was like, I can't physically train this new postdoc. I felt really guilty. Like it was just like really, it's like, oh, this is like a real personal thing, but I can't, it was really hard to like weigh with my professional responsibilities. So it's just like, it's been physically exhausting. And so I think I told myself, I was like, oh, I can do bench work up until, I'm like, my plan was to do up until November. And I think I reached the point where it's like, oh, it's clearly going to be like October before I need to like, cause just being on my feet all day where before it was like, fine, it's exhausting. I hate to sound like this, but I feel like the masking while I'm also just like exhausted is probably not helping the situation. But that's the times we live in. So that's not,
yeah,
we need to wear masks. That's important. So I think I was talking with my friends. I was like, if and when you decide to get pregnant, like, I think just be kind to yourself. It's just exhausting. But do you want me to talk about getting pregnant as part of a lesbian couple at all? Or is that outside the realm?
If you feel comfortable talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you feel comfortable, that sounds great. We didn't really know. So yeah, please. That would be really interesting, well, I think.
Because
again, we haven't heard that perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a quandary, right? So when you don't have sperm in your couple, it's getting pregnant a whole other like rodeo. Because it obviously stones to get pregnant. So we decided to use anonymous donor sperm because we didn't want to have a third party involved that we knew raising our child, even if it was just like on the periphery. It's expensive, right? You have to like pay for sperm, which is fine because that doesn't exist in our relationship. And then you actually pay for all these treatments to get inseminated. So we spent like a year like trying to get pregnant. And so it's really expensive. And so like your friends in heterosexual couples are getting pregnant and they're struggling, but there's just this whole other level of just like thinking about how are you going to do it? And so it was an interesting experience. And so it was just like it's all these appointments. Like I was like, you know, a couple of times a month for the past like year, I've been like running out to the clinic to like try to get pregnant. So that was like a whole other thing to like work around as far as like work. And like, I didn't want to tell like that at that point, I didn't want to tell people at work what we were doing because that's too personal.
Yeah.
So, and then you get like, it's like the question that nobody wants to ask, like, is who's the father or the stepdaughter? Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. It's like, oh, what? Like, how?
I know.
Yeah. What is happening? Because people get so uncomfortable. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
They get right. so uncomfortable when they can't like pin something on mm-hmm. you right away.
Or they're like, which one of you, like, yeah. I'm carrying. So like, is my partner automatically like the father in the family? And we're like, no, no. She's the mother. Like,
yeah, we're so two
weird.
Yeah. So that's like, I think that's a whole other like thing to navigate. So
yeah,
it's not an issue obviously at work, but yeah, it's just like it's like that other level that's always behind something. Like, how do you like
yeah
move past it?
Yeah,
but yeah. So, but dude, I mean, I guess I'm lucky because I'm not doing like it was like ethidium bromide was the only thing I had to like I chose to take it out of my like
yeah
bench work because that seemed, mm-hmm. that was. I was like, please don't let this child have like five heads. It doesn't have one.
Yeah, I mean, but that's like, I mean, I guess that's why, like, I mean, we don't really know of people who have like gone through the process of like being pregnant and having a child like in graduate school or during like a postdoc. I guess like it makes sense that there are lots of people out there who are mm-hmm. going through that process, but yeah. like we don't really hear about it. We don't really talk about it. We don't really like think about how like in our case, like organic chemistry is probably like the least safe place for like a pregnant person to be at because mm-hmm. there's so much like I don't even know what, like, yeah, I don't know. But it's just like, we don't really think about like how accessible like yeah. spaces, like research spaces like that are for mm-hmm. pregnant people. And yeah, so it's a really like good point to bring up.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing organic chemistry and being pregnant. I know there was, when I was in grad school, there was a PI who studied C. difficile, which is a nasty bacteria. And she basically was OSHA banned her from her research lab. She couldn't go in and be with her students because if she got C. diff while she was yeah. pregnant, it was going to be a problem.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Dang, that's dark.
Sorry. She's fine, baby side. I just yeah. like, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I don't know. I'm curious to find out what would happen in OCHEM if.
Yeah.
I mean, probably they wouldn't be able to work either because everything that we use is toxic at some level.
Yeah, yeah,
like even acetone, you know. Like,
yeah. True. Okay,
well, I think I probably touched acetone, but
surely you're fine, just nail yeah. polish remover.
No yeah, maybe I'm being too dramatic, but
yeah,
no, but like I'm assuming you guys haven't picked up a baby, your congratulations, your pregnant baby book. First of all, it's like super heteronormative. And so there's like this little blurb in the front that's like, if the non-birthing parent doesn't identify as male, these things still apply to them, but we will be using he, his pronouns, and we'll be referring to him as the father.
You're like, yeah.
Okay, great.
great.
Whoa.
And there's like, I mean, please, if someone's listening to this and can point me the right direction, I'll take it. But there's like no good queer like non-birthing parent like research. I like tried to find books for my wife that were like
how to like prepare, like how to support mm-hmm.
right, that didn't assume, yeah. that didn't assume that with she a was gender. A man mm-hmm. yeah. yeah,
that's so yeah
does, it doesn't. So if that exists and someone can tell me about it, I would love to find it, because
or is a good idea if anyone wants to write a book or something about it,
that too, you know? Yeah, that too,
yeah.
But yeah, but thank you for sharing that. That's
yeah,
I'm like, this really is really interesting because we never talked about this. I like, honestly, I've never thought about this before, like mm-hmm. at all. So this is great.
Oh, so what I was gonna say about the books is there's like this little blurb that's like, mm-hmm. if you work with chemicals, you need to tell your boss sooner than 12 weeks. Like, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I was like, I bet they get skimmed over a lot.
Yeah. True. But yeah, thank you for sharing
a little bit about that.
No, it's really interesting to hear.
So this is Beck's favorite question, but I get to ask it. I don't know why I always get to ask this question.
I swear you always get to.
I know. I love this question too. So who is your chemistry or science role model and why? And you can have more than one if you do.
Okay. Well, this is probably a strange one, but mine is my grandmother, who was born in 1915 and the same town that I was born in, mm-hmm. grew up in. And actually lived in the same house as her for a while, but she always wanted to be a scientist, but she was born in 1915 in rural Vermont. And so she never got to do it. And so whenever I would tell her about what I was doing, she would be so excited. Like, she wanted to know the details about everything. Yeah. So even though she wasn't actively a scientist, like, I think she really kept me going with it. Yeah, like in college, I don't know if you had this experience when you would we didn't wear lab coats in undergrad labs. And so I'd lean up against the bench. They were always covered in acid. So I'd always have holes in all my shirts, like right where my belly hit the bench.
Oh my God.
Yeah, clearly by your expressions, this didn't happen
to you. No. I think we definitely had lab
coats. We had lab coats.
From what I remember.
Okay, well, they certainly have a large enough endowment. They should be able to buy lab coats. They do it now. Back in the day. And she was like, don't you have aprons to wear to keep that from happening? I don't understand. So she was right. I should have been wearing a lab coat. Anyway, yeah, I think it's my grandmother. I mean, so that's not anyone famous or anything.
That's great. That's one of the reasons why I love asking this question is because there's people who name the big scientists. There's people who name their high school chemistry teachers or family members or, you never know what.
And we love learning about someone people.
Exactly. That too. Exactly.
Yeah.
So last question is, where can people follow you on social media if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, you can follow me. I think my Twitter is at LM Haynes, PhD. And I'm sure you'll link that in the show notes.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, cool. And my Instagram is at Laura_day-by-day, which used to get a lot of posts when I was doing it as a daily blog of my life, basically. And now it's more sporadic whenever I feel like taking a photo. But yeah, so those are where, awesome. And that's less sciencey. My Twitter tends to be more science and more graduate education policy driven.
That's cool.
Awesome.
Awesome. It was so great having you on the show. And again, having these conversations that we haven't really had.
Mm-hmm. It was Thank you also so much.
Great seeing you guys. Talking to you guys. I think I saw you on both of you on South U a few weeks ago, and I wanted to fangirl, but you were with a group of people and I was like, I cannot do this.
If you see us on campus, please.
Yeah.
Drag us down, please. Yeah. But yeah, it was so great talking to you finally and getting to hear this about so your much fun. Life. And
Yeah, and thank you for sharing everything that you did.
Oh, no worries. It's great. Yeah.
We love hearing stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Awesome. Thank you so much. And have a great night.
Have a good night.
Nice talking to you.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope that y'all are being safe and healthy and continue to support each other during this pandemic. Please, please, please get your vaccine if y'all haven't done it yet to keep yourself and those around you safe. Remember to fill out the nomination form on our Twitter if you're interested in being interviewed for the show. You can follow us at MFQCpod. Take care, everybody, and stay safe. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Adios.